The U.S. Agency for International Development is looking for a new way to protect its more than $15 billion of investments in Afghanistan. With most U.S. troops leaving this year, development workers expect it's going to be harder to eyeball construction in remote areas of the country. Larry Sampler is assistant to the administrator in the Afghanistan and Pakistan Affairs Office at USAID. He joins us now to talk about this new plan. Larry, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you for having me.
All right. So you have USAID is seeking a contractor to provide, what is it, surveillance, basically, to go where people can't go?
Well, here's the objective. We do projects all over Afghanistan, which is some of the most inhospitable terrain anywhere in the world. And it's hard for us sometimes, even in a completely peaceful situation, to get U.S. government employees out to all these different remote locations. So for a number of years, since 2004, 5, and 6, we've been looking for other ways. And we're now looking for a contractor to kind of put their arms around this as a big undertaking and come up with new technologies, old technologies, whatever they can inventively and creatively think of to help us remotely see and understand and validate that our programs are delivering the results we want them to deliver. And we do think technology is going to be a big part of that.
All right, let's back up for just a moment. What are the types of projects that we're talking about here, and are they basically grants that have come from USAID for locals to do the work with?
Sometimes. I mean, at the small end of the scale, it could be a grant for a particular local community to self-generate a market where the local farmers can bring produce or crafts or whatever they have to sell and sell at that market. But because of where it is, we can't physically go and look at it. So we can ask the U.S. military in the course of their duties as they fly over or as they drive by this market to take photographs. Or as they engage with local leaders, to ask the local leaders, are they getting what they need from this market? The issue for us is redundancy. We've got, if you imagine a contract officer sitting in an office in Kabul who has to validate a market that's been built 300 miles away over the most inhospitable terrain imaginable, that young woman or that young man needs to have certainty that the market is being built to standard and on time and it's delivering what we want. So the more different ways of getting that information we can give her, the more confident she'll be in her decisions.
And just briefly, if there are building materials and so forth that have to get from point A to point B over this terrain, how do they get there?
I mean, Afghanistan is fascinating. It's a primitive country in many ways structurally, but Afghans have been trading on the Silk Road since before the United States was even a gleam in our founding fathers' eyes. They use what we call jingle trucks that are these massively, beautifully decorated trucks to haul things over roads. In the elections just last week, they used donkeys to carry very modern ballot boxes and modern election technology up to some parts of the northeast Afghanistan. So they've got a variety of ways to get things from point A to point B. Our job is just validating that they got there and that they're having the intended effect.
And so what is the value right now of investments roughly that USAID is providing in Afghanistan, and what do you expect that to do over the next couple of years?
Yeah, since 2002, USAID has put about $14.2 billion into Afghanistan. The product of that money is most easily seen and understood in the ultimate outcomes. Extension of life expectancy from about 42 years to 62 years. And I try to explain that in terms of that means that people who are fathers and mothers will live to see grandchildren and maybe great-grandchildren that they wouldn't have seen prior to this investment. Electrification, there were less than 3% of the population that had electricity when I got there in 2002. Now that number is over 50% and growing constantly. And electricity is, as we know, a driver of economic growth. Without it, it doesn't happen. And with electricity, all kinds of new opportunities open up.
What about water?
Yeah, I mean, Afghanistan has water problems. It's either an overabundance or an underabundance. One of the biggest indicators of economic success year in and year out in Afghanistan is whether or not they have adequate rains. During the rainy season in Afghanistan, there will be floods, and it will wash out some of the roads and some of the villages. But we're working with the Afghans on water management. We're working with the Afghans on irrigation programs that actually retain water and use it during the dry season. Pakistan is a country that's actually managed to do that reasonably well over the decades, and we're hoping to bring some of that technology and innovation to Afghanistan as well.
We're speaking with Larry Sampler. He is assistant to the administrator in the Office of Afghanistan and Pakistan Affairs at the U.S. Agency for International Development. And you mentioned, too, that you know, military flyovers or drive-bys, I guess there will be some marginal presence, you know, past the end of the year of the military, regardless of, you know, what the political decision might be. But what about the State Department? Do they? I mean, I thought that's the kind of thing they're supposed to do once the U.S. military leaves.
Yeah, Afghanistan, just to put it in perspective, if you laid a map of Afghanistan over the northeast U.S., it would stretch from Maine in the north to Carolinas in the south and from the Atlantic all the way to the Great Lakes. So it's a huge country. We will have State Department personnel in Kabul. We'll have State Department personnel possibly in a couple of other locations in the next year or two, but they won't be able to physically visit all of the country. So we're not relying on just U.S. government State Department employees or just the U.S. military. We have other implementing partners that are all over Afghanistan. You know, they may be invited to drive by. They'll be equipped, if they do this for us, with digital cameras that take kind of geo-reference photographs that have a date, time stamp, and a location stamp on them. And then we also rely on the government of Afghanistan. They have a vested interest in most of these programs, and in many cases, they actually have skin in the game in the sense that they contribute financially to the success of the program. And then finally, we're using crowdsourcing in ways that, for a person of my age, confuse me sometimes. We have actually SMS text capacity where we can reach out to a community where we've built a school and actually ask the parents living in that community, is the school there? Is it open? Are the teachers showing up every day for work? And are you satisfied with what you're getting from the school? And the same thing applies to many of the programs. We can actually now ask the intended beneficiaries of these programs, are they getting what they want? And that's only possible because cell technology now reaches about 90% of Afghanistan.
All right, so let's talk about this upcoming contract then. What will that add to all of this sort of low-level but effective surveillance that you have now?
Yeah, I mean, the phrase that comes most readily to mind for me is kind of an information fusion capacity. We want them to be creative. Our partners have got vast amounts of experience working all over the world for us in different kinds of environments, whether it be geographically inhospitable or crime-ridden or even conflict, as in South Sudan. And what we want them to do is bring their innovation to this program. We want us to tell them in the proposals they offer us, this is how we think we can best address your need for multiple avenues and multiple mechanisms of gathering information and the highest level of certitude about the different kinds of programs you have going on. What they offer us for an agricultural program, for example, won't be the same thing that they offer us to confirm a democracy and governance or an economic growth program, and that'll be different still from something for a health or an education program. So they've got to be really creative, think about all the tools at their disposal, and then apply them over the topography, both physical topography and security topography of Afghanistan.
But it sounds like there might be a social media component to this that would be fused into the knowledge picture that you get.
No, absolutely. I would be disappointed if the partner didn't come to us with some suggestion that, especially on some of these softer skilled or softer programs, the democracy and governance and health and education programs, we really need them to be able to reach out and talk to beneficiaries and say, I went to the clinic at 8 o'clock in the morning, and yes, it was open and it was clean and I got what I wanted. Or I didn't get what I wanted. They were out of medicine or the nurse didn't show up. That's going to have to require this partner to propose ways to engage civil society, ideally through technological innovations and social media.
I hate to bring this up the day after Rajiv Shah had a bad hearing, but it sounds like the Twitter type of program that was tried in Cuba, which, by the way, I thought was a great idea. I don't know what the senator's all mad about. He probably doesn't know what Twitter is. But something of that nature might be able to help the Afghanistanis communicate among themselves and build up this data of knowledge about what's going on there.
No, that's a great point. First, though, let me say there's no such thing as a bad hearing for us. Anytime we get a chance to go before Congress and the American people and talk about our programs, it's a good opportunity. Sometimes they're more painful than others, but every hearing for us is a good hearing. And I want the partners to go into this with eyes wide open, understanding that some of these technologies won't be widely understood. We need them to propose them, and then we'll make informed decisions about which technologies are the best ones for this program. But I'd rather have all kinds of options on the table and be able to decide which ones not to use rather than hear later that there was some great idea we didn't consider because it didn't come up.
It sounds like you have personally spent some time in that country.
I have, actually. I went in 2002 when the place literally had no electricity, no running water, and no glass in any of the windows of any building. And I was there for the emergency oil jirga when President Karzai was first identified as the interim president. And I lived there for about 5 years, 4.5 years, working for the United Nations and a couple of NGOs before coming back to join the U.S. government.
So is it, wow, so is it your experience that, say, people that are not educated in the way we understand or not technologically advanced as the way we understand it in the West can be given things like cell phones or laptops or tablets and adapt pretty quickly to them?
Oh, absolutely. One of the neatest things I've seen in Afghanistan is cell phone technology. Folks that literally haven't had electricity their entire life, it won't take them more than a day to figure out how to send a text message to their mom. Or how to one of the things that we're already offering is a way for farmers to get market prices at the different local markets over SMS. And these farmers who have no teeth, the 70-year-old farmer who's been working the ground since well before I was born, they will figure out how to use that SMS technology to get market prices. So they decide when they get to the end of their driveway, do I take my tomatoes left to the market in that village or right to the market in another village? These guys are really sophisticated traders and have been doing it for centuries. And this is just a new technology that makes them better traders.
Sounds like a great project. Larry Sampler is assistant to the administrator in the Afghanistan and Pakistan Affairs Office at USAID. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.